If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Welcome back. This is Karen Conti, and we're talking legal issues for the next hour. So sit back and bemoan the fate of the groundhog. The groundhog just failed us again, unfortunately. I want to talk a little bit about this tragic story that happened this week. 67 people were killed after a passenger plane hit a helicopter midair near Washington, D.C.'s Ronald Reagan Airport. And there's more details emerging every day about all of the people who were injured and killed. Actually, all of them were killed. And so I wanted to get an expert on to talk about what happens next. How are these matters investigated? Who might be culpable? And what is going on now to get answers for the families of the victims and also the flying public? Because we want to know as well. And with us is Bob Clifford. He is the best aviation attorney in the nation here from Chicago and Clifford Law Offices. He's internationally recognized as a plaintiff's trial firm that concentrates in aviation, personal injury, medical malpractice, and those types of cases. He's represented victims injured or killed in every major commercial airline crash in the last four decades, including the American Airlines crash at O'Hare in 1979, the DC-10 crash in Sioux City, Iowa, 1989, and on and on. And so he knows all about these things, and he was actually a person who was the lead counsel settling claims in the World Trade Center property damage for $1.2 billion. And also, one fact is he represented the family member of WGN, Bob Collins, in a deadly plane crash 25 years ago, almost to this date. And with that introduction, Bob Clifford, hi, how are you?
Wow. Hi, Karen. Good to be with you. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you. And, you know, this is just really, when you see something like this, when, you know, all of the people aboard both aircrafts are dead and they plunged into the Potomac River, and it just kind of just is a horrible thing to even think about. Now, you have handled cases like this. Tell our listeners what's going on now to find out what really happened here.
Sure. There are multiple investigations going on, but the lead investigation is conducted under federal law by the National Transportation Safety Board. That's the NTSB. They have exclusive control over this. So, for an example, families do not have a right to hire an investigator and put that investigator into the field. What happens is under the law, the NTSB will designate what are called parties. So it'll be American Airlines, it'll be PSA, the Airline Pilots Association, also the manufacturer of the fuselage and the engines. That the U.S. government is going to be there on behalf of the Army and on behalf of the air traffic controllers. Those are called the quote-unquote parties. Regrettably, and this is something that families have fought about for decades, they're excluded. So we have to sit on the sidelines, but that doesn't mean that we don't do anything. What we do and have already done is we've retained a group of experts. Quite sadly, many of them, there's a lot of overlap with the experts that I've already retained and the experts that I'm going to use in the upcoming April 7 Boeing 737 MAX 8 trial out of the Ethiopian crash back in March of 2019. So these experts that we work with will be analyzing whatever becomes available publicly on the data. Yeah, they have found the black boxes on the aircraft. I'm told they also found the black box, or the equivalent of it, on the helicopter, although there might be some damage there. And the government will download what's called the CBR, the cockpit voice recorder, and get all the transmissions. And that's kind of a very unique process, because they'll take the tape and they go into this really soundproof room with elaborate noise protection to listen very intently to the exact channels that are on that system to make sure they develop a transcript that's complete and accurate, because you're going to need that. I mean, even though we hear on TV, you know, the ATC guys going back and forth with one another, right now we don't know, for an example, well, was the ATC operator talking to one pilot of an aircraft or a different one? We know that the HEC was talking to the military on one channel, UHF, and the other one on a different channel, VHF. So these things matter. But in the meantime, the families are on, you know, listen, I literally got off of a call a short while ago with a group of families who are returning to town. They live in Maryland. And their loved ones were returning to town from a trip. And these families are looking for answers. They are confused. None of us are prepared for this. None of us have experience with this. You know, this is a commercial airline disaster.
Bob, as you say, these investigations by the government are going to go on, and they're going to do their own thing. And then you have your experts in reserve ready to look at it again. How often do the experts that are hired by, you say, American Airlines or the plaintiffs who were victims, how often do those results vary from what the initial investigation says?
Not too widely. They might have a different interpretation of the flight path that the exact plane took. I have a visual in my mind, for an example, of the flight path of the Ethiopian 737, where our people do differ with the Boeing people in one minor respect, but it might be a meaningful respect and aspect. But by and large, these things are digitally recorded, so therefore it makes the data pretty reliable. These experts might interpret things a little bit differently, but in the end, the material difference isn't high. And so it's not going to impact what I think the ultimate conclusion is going to be. I mean, I really believe that, you know, President Trump got it right when he said that the helicopter was number one, it was a preventable crash to begin with, just like the Boeing crash was. And number two, it was a helicopter that was out of its authorized altitude. And that certainly appears to be the evidence that's going to unfold. They need to confirm that through the flight data recorder. But that also doesn't mean, though, that these pilots, sadly, sorry to report, we already know that there were alerts going on about traffic in the area. And did they have time to respond? And, you know, did the air traffic controllers mislead either the helicopter pilot or the American pilot? I mean, all of these competing issues are in play.
Bob Clifford, he's the founder of Clifford Law Offices here in Chicago. He's an internationally recognized plaintiff's lawyer who concentrates in aviation, personal injury, medical malpractice, wrongful death. Let's take a break, Bob. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how these cases unfold and a little bit about your case that you're handling for Boeing. You're listening to WGN. We're talking about the tragic mid-air crash in Washington, D.C. this week. And we're here with Bob Clifford. He is the founder of Clifford Law Offices, and he's an aviation expert. Bob, thanks for holding with me. I have a couple of texters who are concerned about President made some comments about who might be responsible. You know, I'm not going to get into the politics of that because this is not political in my view. But is it possible that the investigation could be influenced by political forces, or do you think, just knowing what you've done doing this for four decades, that they are pretty independent in trying to get to the truth rather than a political truth?
Yeah, I believe that it's the truth. I don't think, and like you, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think when the president first spoke about it, I don't think he was trying to infer some politics. And I know we've had a deviation where he starts talking about the DEI stuff. I don't think any of that's at play. I think he was given briefings. Others have been giving briefings. He's not the only one talking about this, that there was some, here, the digital flight data recorder already of the aircraft talks about it being in the 300 number on the altitude. The helicopter was authorized for 200. So whatever the exact numbers are, there's a disparity there, and it's a real problem. So, but I truly think that the NTSB is as gold standard of an high quality of an investigative entity anywhere in the world.
Well, that's good to hear. It is good to hear. Now, I've heard about these night vision goggles and whether or not the helicopter pilot's use of them was appropriate or not appropriate. Were they wearing them? Can you explain in layman's terms what those are and what the possible problems could be with these things?
Sure. Well, let's not forget that we're talking about an airport next to the nation's capital and the Pentagon, right? There are military bases here, and it's very common and well known that there are training exercises going along the Potomac River, and there's no problem with that. I mean, helicopters and aircraft coexist every day of the week. And so the however to that is that when we are talking about a training exercise, in my humble opinion, and experts agree with me, they ought not to be allowed anywhere near the active airspace being used by commercial aircraft. In fact, I came out and asked the media to start pushing that subject because the families aren't organized yet. They don't have, you know, that's one of the problems in all these things. The families get left aside, right? And they're the real people here who are the victims. And so the families are being left aside. You and the media, in my humble opinion, can be saying to the officials, hey, why are you allowing, until we know more about what occurred, why are you allowing these military helicopters to engage in any flight activity around the commercial aircraft? You can't have it. It's already very tight space because it's the nation's capital, and we restrict. Here, we all see every day, look out your window, you see an airplane flying across the sky in downtown Chicago. Well, that's not permitted over Washington, D.C. It's restricted space. So that's part one of this. Part two of this, it is a training exercise. And these pilots who put their lives, on the line and fight for our country, they need to be trained, and they do use night vision and night goggles. It is what it is. There's the first time you're using the night goggles, and there's the last time, and along the way there are times. And so who knows what the experience was with the use of the night goggles? Who knows if that had any bearing what to do on this crash, because we do know that the air traffic controller specifically asked the helicopter, do you see the CJR plane? And there was no response to that, at least is what's being reported at the moment. So could the night goggles be a factor here because possibly the pilot didn't see, the helicopter pilot didn't see? We just don't know. It's rank speculation to talk about that. Could it be a factor? That's what we will receive in terms of information from the NTSB, and I'm sure they will cover that issue. And bear in mind, there's that cockpit voice recorder and the devices on the helicopter, and who knows what transmissions will they'll be able to listen to, and that'll fill in some of the blanks over time, no question about it.
How long do you think this will take? What if you use in the past as in the future? Well, what do you think?
Well, the board has already said we're going to give you a preliminary report in 30 days, and that's great. But sadly, these reports can take 6 months to 12 months, even 18 months to come out, the final reports. Now, I think given the nature of this, for an example, to complete the thought on the congestion at that airport, even Senator Warner came out and talked about the fact that, hey, this has got to be something that gets immediate attention because congestion around Reagan is widely known and it's a problem. So I would expect that we're talking about 6 to 12 months for the final report. If it could be sooner, more power to them, but I suspect that's not going to be the case.
And Bob, so, it's from a legal standpoint, you get in an airplane and it crashes, someone's responsible because planes are not supposed to crash. So it's a matter of not if, it's a matter of who was responsible and what percentages or in all percentage. So what happens next? So, there is a determination that one of the parties is responsible and culpable. How then does the compensation get determined? Are there limitations to the compensation? How does that work?
Well, here the lawyers will work on, I like to say, multiple tracks or timelines. So here you have the issues of responsibility. Who is or who is not responsible? A lot of times, Karen, there can be more than one party at fault for a single event. And I suspect that when you look at this this event, look at it as a ball of 100%. My bet is we're going to find that there's a piece of that ball or a piece of that pie that the air traffic controllers could be fairly ascribed to, the helicopter, and as well as the airline pilots. Okay, that's my guess at this juncture. And that's on one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is working with the family to develop the necessary proof to be able to present the claim, the litigation on behalf of that family. A very complicating factor here is that the U.S. government is involved, because under federal law, number one, you can't just walk across the street to the federal courthouse tomorrow and file a lawsuit. There's a process, a claiming process, that must be followed. It's called a Form 95. You literally have to tell the government that you're coming, and you have to ask them for permission to come. And they have 6 months to give you a yay or a nay. They never say yay. So after that 6 months expires, you can sue the government, but only in federal court, only in front of a federal judge. And it's the judge who ultimately determines how much compensation the family is entitled to, if at all, against a federal agency. Now, what in the real world, what will happen is that any claims against American Airlines or PSA will be commingled and consolidated with any governmental claims. And then if there were ever to be a trial, the judge would allow a jury to decide the damages as it relates to the commercial company, the American or PSA, and any other, if there is one other. And then he would decide the damages to be awarded, if at all, by on behalf of ATC or the Army. And he would listen to the jury. It's called an advisory jury. So the jury's decision as to American would be decisive. And the jury's decision could be used as an advisory opinion, if you will, to the federal judge that she can accept or reject as she sees fit. And so that's after a jury hears all the evidence. You know, like, for an example, I mentioned that we're starting this trial on April 7th against Boeing for the preventable MAX 8 crash. And we are presenting testimony from experts about what the passengers experienced. That's one of the elements. Between the time of takeoff and the crash. And then we're presenting the damage claims of each of the families. We're talking about economic experts who will talk about loss of earnings. And then we're presenting evidence about the individual families. A father who died leaving his lovely wife and two children, or a husband who died leaving his widow without any children. Or the man who died leaving a wife and three young children. I mean, the jury's going to hear about those families. They're going to hear about how they lived their lives before the death, and then they're going to hear about how their lives are being lived in the loss that has followed.
Bob Clifford, thank you so much for joining us, and maybe you can join us again and talk a little bit as this investigation ramps up. Thank you, Bob Clifford of the Clifford Law Offices. If you'd like to reach him, you can always contact me or him, and I'll put that on the website.